Hey guys, don't forget the 2023 Street Cop Training Conference, Nashville, Tennessee, April 23rd through the 28th. You do not want to miss this. So far, guest speakers, Rob O'Neill, the Navy SEAL that was responsible for killing Osama bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, U.S. Marine, Medal of Honor recipient, jumping on an IED to protect his platoon. Fox News host Tommy Lahren returns for 2023. Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff Mark Lamb, Sheriff David Clark, and more to come. You don't want to miss this event. We additionally have 20 of the country's top law enforcement educators giving you the best experience of your life. You will leave this event knowing more about your job and how to be proficient at the things you do, hands down, any other event that you'll ever attend. I personally guarantee it. Don't miss out. There's a room code at streetcop.com for our room block and room code at the Gaylord at Opry is where the event's taking place. Don't miss out on a discounted rate. The rate is from Sunday to Thursday. Put that in and find yourselves at a half-price room. Split it with a friend, but make sure you get there. You don't want to miss this event. It is going to be that good. If you trust me and you trust Street Cop, trust that you will leave there feeling like you've had an experience of a lifetime.
You trying to be a street cop?
This is episode 2 with Ann Corrales. And we
<You're stupid>.
The last thing we spoke about before a thunderstorm took out your power.
Yeah.
And we had to make
yes,
it.
Yes, literally. Yes. Yes.
And by the way, and Ann has been giving us the fucking brush like we're dog shit for about 3 months now. It's all right, Ann. We got you.
And it comes out.
Ann's too busy. You know, she got things
you know
going
our
on.
Feelings, Ann. We totally are. Oh, Ann, no worries. No horror. Ann's giving us the shaft the whole time.
No, but the what we talked about as we finished the last episode, we were going into the hospital. We didn't go into exactly what happened in the hospital, but you talked about after the hospital and the loneliness that sets in because everybody who was there for you at that time, at that moment, seemed to have disappeared because they went on with their lives at that time. So we can go into that or we can go back to because I'd like to know what goes on at the hospital. That's where we left off. So
oh, you want to hear about what goes on in the trauma?
Yeah, you know, I do because like
some of the most bizarre shit ever.
Yeah, I think I've kind of gathered that. And the reason I asked that is because people in this in our audience may experience themselves going to the trauma center and will recognize and say, oh, yeah, you know what? I heard that on the podcast with Ann. This is what I'm anticipating is going to happen. This will probably happen next. I can expect this. This happened, da da da. So let's go into you're being wheeled into the gurney. That's where we kind of left off. Your rep is there. That gave you a lot of comfort. I thought that was really important because if you are a union representative or somebody who's there to rep a police officer after being involved in a significant incident, Ann said that it made her feel like $1 million that somebody was there and cared enough to be there.
Oh man. You know, I feel like there were officers there too. Which is great, but man, I'm telling you, it's a scary moment to be in. And when you get there and your rep is there before you, it felt like he was either there right after I got there, but the way I remember it, they were wheeling me in and the guy leans over and he's like, I'm here, Ann, I got you. My TMPA rep was there. And I was like, wow, boy, that's worth way more than what you pay into it, to be quite honest. And I'm not an infomercial for any rep one way or another, but what I know is that he was there and I'll never forget the feeling that came over me of like, well, this is going to be okay. Cause I got my representation here and it's going to be okay. It was such a relief. It was such a relief, to see him there. Super important. Yeah.
You're going through the hospital. What happens next? We'll start getting to like some of the physical. Let's also rehash a very brief few minutes of what occurred in the line of duty. So your previous episode is what, 696, Frank? 696, the previous. So now we're in the 700s.
You want to rehash?
Do the 3 minute
version.
Go watch
696, y'all. That's my rehash.
Ann was shot several times in the line of duty on a traffic stop. Ended up chasing the guy down. And eventually you were ordered by your supervisor to go to the hospital or pull over, right?
Well, yeah, we're in this chase and they're still shooting at me during the pursuit. And so at the very end point of it, and I want to make that a point at the very end of it, because, you know, I'm in Texas, they let us work over here. So we were at the point where I'm not even in my own city, not even in my own county. And you know, I am injured. I got multiple shots. I had two holes in my face, my ears dangling, my hole in my left breast. So, you know, I'm injured. And he can tell now the tone and the cadence in my voice, the way I'm calling my pursuits different in that I'm reading street signs to tell you what street I'm on. So he knows I'm not, this isn't ideal. And I was actually in the same frame of mind. So at the time that I draw back, he is also getting on the radio and saying, okay, no more, stand your ground, stay there. No more pursuit. And we were on the same wavelength there. So he calls me off. And as he arrives, I say, let's drop back, because I'd seen some indicators there that led me to believe that this suspect was kind of baiting us into an ambush. So we back out. And that was the time when, as I'm turning my car around so we could back out of that immediate vicinity that I last saw them, that I noticed I couldn't feel my legs from this adrenaline dump. So I could tell, you know, I'm working the pedals to the car, but I don't feel my legs. And so, you know, that's where I think we left off when the thunder smite my house and I couldn't talk to you anymore. But what I can tell you is immediately after that, the medical personnel show up. They are there. They load me onto a gurney and into the box, you know, into an ambulance. And they do, HPD does a police escort and gets me to the trauma center quicker than I've ever, we were a ways from it. And from what I recall, and we got there super quick and it just was crazy. It was so bizarre. The whole thing is surreal, as you can imagine. You know, I'm in this ambulance and they're assessing my injuries and it's kind of chaotic and serious and I'm cracking jokes and it's all just, none of it matches. It's all inappropriate. It just felt weird. Like I was cracking jokes to try to offset the stress of it. And they're being serious. And then you got one being serious and the other one's kind of like trying to be serious, but not too serious. It was just all awkward and weird. And then they get me to the trauma center and wheel me in. And you can't write this shit. Let me tell you, I talk about this during my presentations. You can't write it. The same doctor that had worked on me a year, the October prior, when I was dragged by that suspect and thrown from the car and ended up, you know, shooting him through the windshield. The same doctor that worked on me in the ER that night was the same doctor that was now working on me in the trauma room. And he didn't know it. And I didn't know it. But while he was digging his big old sausage fingers in the hole in my chest, trying to locate the slug, because there was no exit wound in my back or anywhere to speak of, only an entry wound on my chest. So as he's digging his fingers in there, I guess he felt that an appropriate time to reminisce about the time that he once took care of a female cop in the trauma center because she was dragged by a car and shot the guy in the face. And I remember looking up and I was like, you got to be kidding me. I was like, that's me. And he looked at me, he's like, what's wrong with you?
Oh, shit.
What's wrong with me, right? Like, that should have been, if that wasn't a prelude to what was to come for us, right, in the coming year or so about everything is our fault. I don't know what is.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I had the big chief, the little chief, the patrol captain, the CID lieutenant, CID. So I felt like the whole command staff was standing there at the foot of my trauma bed and they're cutting my pants off. And I'm like, I'm not shot down there. You know, that was so freaking bizarre, man. They're cutting my pants off and this doctor's digging in, they're flipping me over. And it was incredibly painful and chaotic and just weird. You know, I guess they were so concerned about me. They were watching with that lens, but at the same time, like there was no regard for the fact that I'm getting my clothes cut off. It was just so crazy. So I guess if I was to prepare anybody, I would say, look, just prepare for it to be chaotic, prepare for all rules to be off. And there's no privacy. You know, there's no, the people who are there, your officers who are there are worried about you. And if they're loud and they're not scooted out of the room, like what you normally see, you know, on TV and whatnot, get out, and they close curtains and you have all this privacy. It wasn't like that for me. And while I know everybody's trauma room experience is probably different or would be different, I don't know. That's how it happened for me. And these guys, they didn't want to leave my side, man. And that, you know, that says a lot too, because they didn't want to leave me. They weren't going to leave me there. And it was really nice just to know that your brothers weren't going to leave your side. That was nice.
Have you felt any differently if it was your sisters or you think it's just men or women, just a family? You tell me.
Yes. It was different. When my family, my Blue Line family, was there in the trauma room to when my husband arrived, it was different. You know, I guess you're still in work mode and you're still in the mindset of, you know, your warrior ethos, if you will. You know, you're hurt. You got these gunshots, whatever. This guy is digging his fingers into your body through your gunshot wounds and it's painful. But, you know, I wasn't going to cry. There was no crying. There was no even real fear. Like the concern was there, but that I knew I was hurt, but the fear didn't take over and the emotion until that sea of blue parted with what that is my Blue Line family. And it parts because my husband's walking in. And when I saw him, it was just waterworks. It was instantly, I went into this indescribable level of guilt come over me.
Like vulnerability? Is that part of it?
It's guilt.
Well, I think let's talk about the traditional man-woman relationship in a marriage, right? I mean, traditional. I'm not sitting here trying to play politically correct stuff.
No, I understand.
Traditionally, the man is supposed to be, you know, I got to tell you, like, you know, I've female police officers, like I've been around a while, right? I've been there.
Since the 1800s.
I'm just saying my point is like, I meant like I have maybe been in some kind of off-duty relationship at times, right? It happens.
No, not you. No way.
But you know, not with any coworkers of mine, other agencies, but the tough persona is left at the door when you come home to be a wife and a mother, essentially for the most part. And I feel like the experiences I've had, they've really been one person at work. I think we all have. I think we all put a bat suit on at work. But I think it goes into that traditional thing. I'm asking, did that happen? You go to that traditional, like I'm the wife and the mother, and like I'm a little more vulnerable because I'm with people that I love. There's got to be a vulnerability change. I see it. I mean, I see it with girls that are in law enforcement.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think it's different for different women. Really, it is. It also is different. I've seen in dual LEO relationships where the woman and the man is in law enforcement. Or a first responder of that type, you know, responding to emergency calls for service, your firefighters, your police officers, your EMTs, your paramedics, you know, it's like, it's tough. It's a really tough situation for a woman to be in. We work in a male-dominated profession, sure. Right? And if you're badass and if you are sharp and you're hardcore and you're a cop's cop and you do the damn job and you do it well, there's going to be a certain roughness around your edges as a woman. It's inevitable, right? And I know that the struggle for most women is, you know, that transition back and forth. Sometimes you get stuck in one or another, or it gets more difficult to transition, you know, to just being the woman that you are, the wife that you are, or the significant other, the spouse, the partner, the mom that you are, and then put your bat suit on, like you said, put your cape on and head on out. It's tough to cycle back and forth in between that all the time. Whereas men don't really have to do that. They can be the champion with the big S on their chest all the time. Right. Because as you say, traditionally, that's what the roles are. And so that makes up for a very difficult place for a woman law enforcement officer like myself and so many thousands of others out there. Because my husband at the time, we're now divorced, but my husband was not in law enforcement, had never dated anyone in law enforcement, was never in the military. So he's got like type A of the 10th power here, a U.S. Marine Corps vet, former boxing champ. Everything I've ever done has been male dominated, right? Cop, you know, military fight champ. But I love being a woman and I am a woman. But I am a lot. I know that I'm, there are so many elements and aspects to me that, I mean, if you're not a real confident man who's really deep rooted in who you are and your self identity is solid and you don't have your level of confidence up to snuff, I guess it would be tough to deal with someone like me. And you know, the faults that we tend to have are that we sometimes forget to turn it off. I'm guilty of it. I don't know a woman out there who does this work and has been doing this work for this long as I have and has trouble sometimes to switch that off and just be meow, purr. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's hard. It gets hard. And sometimes it's not necessarily in the fiber of who you are. So, you know, for us to be in relationships with men that are outside of law enforcement can be tricky. For us to be in relationships with men in law enforcement can be tricky. It's just tricky. And then you add on top of that, the layer of, you know, the struggles that we face emotionally, the battles that we face. We don't get to just pick up the phone and call one of our brothers at 2 a.m. because we're struggling and having a tough time and we've been hitting the bottle and maybe we want to get some shit off our chest. We don't get to call, you know, I can't call Dennis at 2 a.m. Dennis' wife's not going to appreciate that. You know, some of my closest friends, you know, their wives aren't going to appreciate that. And I understand that. It's justifiable. I get it. But who do we call? Like, and I think that sometimes I think people forget that just because you are resilient, I think I'm one of the most resilient mofos on this planet. I'm like David Goggins level, yo. And if you don't know who that is, you need to do your research. But like, I'm one of the most resilient people that I think I know. And I don't say that to toot my own horn. I know that. I know you just the things I've gone through. And there's a lot of people out there that are really resilient. And then there's a lot of people who aren't, and their coping mechanisms aren't that great. But my point is that I think sometimes people forget that people like us who can navigate, you know, some of the more difficult crap that we have to navigate through in this career field, because we are able to do it, people forget and think that it doesn't hurt. And it does have an effect. The thing is,
human beings.
We are human beings, and we keep stepping. But you know, everybody has to stop and take a shower, right? I hope. And I don't know about you, Den, but sometimes my shower is just the place where I let that all come out, because it's just me. I'm alone. I'm in the water already. So the tears don't stand out as much when you're already wet. And I just let it out right there. But yeah, I think that's something people don't really think about is, you know, we are resilient and we do.
I get it. You know what? I get it out through meditation.
Yeah.
When I meditate, it's like this morning I had a lot to do with cook a turkey because we're having our Thanksgiving thing here at the office today. So, you know, I had to get the turkey out, cut it. I got to get it. You know, I'm a real considerate cook / chef. So I had to get the turkey prepared correct. You know, I cook quite well. Unbeknownst to a lot of people, I am one badass motherfucker in the kitchen with all humility. But at 5:25 in the morning, I'm like, I can go work out right now. This is great. I have a gym in my house. I was like, but nice. You know what? I should probably get this meditation in. I got a lot of stuff going on right now. Let me just get this meditation in and calm this body down. You know, I sat down and that's part of the discipline of meditation is you're making the decision to go meditate. So I went, sat and meditated, and I'm glad I did because I felt how tense my body was. Legs were locked up. Like once you start understanding meditation, I could then calm it all down. And I'm glad that I did it today because today was a day that I need to do it. I'll knock another session out.
How long have you been meditating? Because you're right. This is a discipline. Meditation, it is.
So it's interesting. I'm going to start by saying this. The disciplines in my life are sometimes contradicted because of the kind of life that I live, in the sense that I'm a very busy person. People who are familiar with street cop training know that it's wild. Now I've chosen it. I enjoy it. I'm not complaining about it. It takes a lot, and sometimes you come off track a little bit. I've been meditating for 3 years. I'm back transitioning to, for the past 6 weeks, I've really been on the road a lot. I'm transitioning back into piece by piece, getting my discipline on every level back down to where it was. I'm actually, here's a good one. I'm in a book right now that, because I had to reset. I had a lot going on in my life, and I'll tell you about it when I see you.
Okay.
But I had to go back to my core roots. And I want to revisit who I was 7 years ago.
Okay.
And so one of the books I bought literally recently, but I've listened to it 4 or 5 times already, is The Rule of 10X by Grant Cardone. Now,
I'm going to write that down.
Yeah. So it's a business book, but it's also a life book as well. And what's interesting is I haven't heard it in quite a few years. I listen to books. I'm an auditory learner. And there's a lot of things in there that were good reminders, the principles that got me to where I am now. But also in the position I'm in now, how my life has changed, some of the things I didn't hear before that I'm hearing now. So, but I'm trying to get back
here.
Yeah. Oh, my heart's clear as day.
Yeah.
It's the brain. There's a lot going on. It's a to do.
You know, what's cool is you know exactly what I meant. I said in here. I didn't say in here. And there is a difference.
Oh yeah.
And you knew that.
I've never been somebody of bad moral character. Mm-hmm. I have made bad decisions, but well, I was never a bad person.
Yeah.
And we all have the things that we're not proud of and our super secrets that we would never want any of the world to know. Mm-hmm. Things like that exist for sure. But doesn't mean that any of us are bad people at all.
Right. I can totally relate to a lot of what you're saying, and what you said there is, you know, you revisited who you were 7 years ago. You know, that's a big part of what I've been doing on this entire journey since, you know, shooting number two that we've been talking about. And that's, you know, I'm a firm believer that you have to kind of go back to, as you're working through things in your life that you need to work through. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of go back and you have to, you know, meet your, for me, for example, you have to meet your little girl self. I said that recently when I was doing this keynote speaking thing at a women's conference. And I said, you know, don't be afraid to go meet her, to go meet that little girl. It's scary as hell. But wow, if you could find the courage to do that. And so, you know, you talking about, I wanted to go revisit who I was 7 years ago. That's a really good concept too, because it's not always, you know, it's always nice to just go back and revisit, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And it doesn't necessarily have to mean little boy you or little boy Ann. It could be, you know, Ann 9 years ago after shooting two, or Ann, you know, 7 years ago after shooting two, where I really had started to, you know, turn into somebody I didn't recognize. And so hey man, hats off to you. It's a great journey. It's not always easy, but it's a great journey to be on. I hope to hear about it one day.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I just needed clarity a little bit, because I'm so caught up in the weeds and the minutia, mm-hmm. that I had to go back to the principles of how this came about, how it moved so quickly. And instead of worrying about micro principles, the macro principles. And so this is a great book, and I gotta be honest with you. If it speaks to you, it'll speak to your soul. It's a profound book of how to approach not only business, but life as well. And essentially it's, if you want to have massive change in your life, take massive action. If you want to have a massive company, don't do things with the mindset of like, this year I'm going to put on 5 new instructors and then we'll be this. It's like, this year we're going to try to put on 500 instructors and see what happens. You know, just go as hard as you can. And the extreme discipline about, and he talks about it, even finding love. He goes, you will get out of it what you put into it.
Do they touch on trauma?
I don't think it's more of a, so in business world, I like to call it rah-rah. But I also think it's one of those books where if you're the right person, it'll speak to you. I don't think anybody could listen to it and not find something good in it. It's a really good book. Yeah. But I think there's different books that speak to people in different parts of their life. I haven't had to have the rah-rah feeling. But recently I was like, man, let me get back to that why. You know, what I felt then. Let me remind, like, not because I'm having any doubts, I'm not going anywhere. But I had to get back there and remind myself of, you know, and he talked about it. It's so funny because he's like, you're going to have legal problems. You're going to have personal problems. You're going to have unforeseen events, economic things, people trying to ruin your business, people saying things about you behind your back. And I'm like, see, I didn't hear that then. I was ignoring that. Now that I'm experiencing it, it was good to remind me that we're all, when you do anything like we're doing here, as honorable as I see it, and in the best fashion that we can, being good human beings, you know, there are still people in this world who have a very, very sincere problem with what we're trying to do as a company. And the craziest thing is, like, but why? You know, it just comes down to, they have deep-rooted insecurity and jealousy and stuff like that. And that sounds crazy to say, but it is true, because you're trying to make sense of it. Like, what did we do? Right. Besides, like, really try to fucking fix things. And, like, you know,
that was a huge, it's funny you say that, because, you know, I felt like that. And lots, most, if not all, that I've ever spoken to, law enforcement officers who've gone through something similar to what I've had to go through, have said this to me. And it's that feeling right there. It's that feeling of, you know, what did I do? What did I do wrong? I went through a phase of trying to figure out why a lot of people that I thought I was super close to, were now treating me like, you know, I had, you know, the cooties or something. And I didn't understand it. I didn't understand why I was feeling like such an outcast. And no one ever really explained that this could potentially happen. And I think it's one of those dirty little things that nobody talks about, you know, be prepared for this, be prepared for that. Like we talk about the obvious, be prepared. You might have flashbacks. You might have, you know, triggers, nightmares, whatever. Nobody talks to you about, oh, be prepared that some of the people that you think are your closest friends in your life will betray you, or they will turn their backs on you, or they will start to talk bad about you behind your back. And those things hurt. I don't care who you are. Like, I don't care who you are and how much you don't give a shit about what people think about you. I tend to be more on that side where, hey, if you have a problem with, I'm not a mean person. I'm not a malicious person. I don't go out of my way to be unkind to people. And I'm not, you know, two-faced, and I'm not gossipy. None of that. I don't do that. That's not how I roll. So I really don't care a lot of times when people have stupid things to say about me, but when it's people that you care about, people that you loved or that you really invested friendship into, it's shocking and it can feel really painful and really hurtful. And so like you were just saying, going through that whole thing of what did I do? What, you know, trying to figure out why, what happened? Do you think I asked to get shot? Do you think I asked to be thrust into this position that I'm in now? And none of it has ever been self-serving for me. It's always been about what I could learn to give back to other people to help them. It's like a giant fucking 9-year debriefing that I've been trying to create. And for some reason, people have a problem with it. And I really had to get to a place where I can look at it and say, you know, it's a you problem. It's not a me problem. And then, you know, when you get here and you're hurting at the level that I have had to struggle through, and a lot of us have had to, you'll understand what I'm saying. It's like you said, Den, you didn't hear that back then. It wasn't applicable to you. You know what I mean? Like you weren't feeling that. That wasn't what your focus was. But now you're looking at it again through a different lens because you're feeling it. Now it's applicable. One day, everybody will find themselves in a position like, you know, like I've been in the fight after the fight, if you will. Maybe it won't be from a shooting on duty. Maybe it will. Maybe it will be because of something in their personal life. At the end of the day, I said it once, I'll say it a million times. It's not just a cop story. It's a human being story. And that's all I'm trying to do is get that message out. And if somebody has a problem with that, maybe it's just because it's not applicable to them right now. That's how I look at it.
You know, I remind myself of many times in my life of when I decided to take on something. And you know, I really do believe that people like you and me and other people that I've met were chosen for a reason. And I think the reason was God said, you're strong enough to do this. Mm.
I have a really good friend. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. I would be shocked if you hadn't. His name is Matias Ferreira. He is a Marine Corps vet, and he was the first double amputee active police officer in the entire country. He works in New York, and he's an incredible.
You took with the guy in Long Island?
Yeah.
Yeah. Suffolk County or Nassau County.
Yeah. He's an incredible human being. That is my brother from another mother. He is a fellow Relentless Defender ambassador. And we've had some very intimate conversations along the way since we've met and gotten to know each other and been around each other in the same circles at Police Week, et cetera. And one day he said to me, God chose us. Just like you're saying, Dennis, God chose us. And that just resonated with me. It gives me a lump in my throat right now thinking about this conversation. Because in that moment, it really just resonated with me and it just cleared up a lot of the fogginess of noise that can kind of take over your head sometimes when you're trying to just figure things out. And I'll never forget, he said, hey, God chose us. God chose us. The guy just has a great attitude about everything. You know, he got his legs blown off in the war and every reason to sit there and just cry in his fucking beer and be a big baby about it. Nobody would blame him, right? But he just didn't do that, man. He didn't do that. He's a freaking Marine through and through to the bone marrow. And the guy just took that shit sandwich and found a way to not only use it as fuel to put those rounds down range and get somewhere where to fight the demons, if you will, and make something good of it. But he also found a way to take that situation and his pain and, like me, give that pain to someone else to help others heal their own. And I have mad respect for people who do that because it's not easy. You have to be willing to embrace your vulnerability at an insane level.
A lot of bravery. It's a very brave person to stand up for what you believe in.
Mm-hmm. He said that to me, what you just said, God chose us. So I was really, it really gave me kind of a little butterfly in my stomach when you said God, that you think God, I believe it's true. I believe we are chosen. And whether you believe in God or not, you know, hopefully everybody believes in something bigger than themselves, right? It doesn't have to be God. My son says this. It doesn't have to be, you know, whoever, it may be Allah for you, God, you know, whoever it is, maybe it's, some people call it, you know, spirituality, you know, they're just spiritual. Some people call it Mother Earth, whatever it is for that person. You believe in something bigger than yourself, then you have to kind of take a look back at people in situations and in life, on life journeys like ours. And you have to look at that and go, man, that is definitely something that I had to be chosen for. Sometimes, I don't know about you, but sometimes I'll think to myself, was I worthy to be chosen of this? Why was I, did God make the right choice choosing me? You know, there are no mistakes, you know, he knows why. And I'm just along for the ride to try to, you know, to do with this, what I was supposed to be doing. And that in itself is its own little journey. So, yeah, I agree with you. 1,000,000%. I agree with you. I agree with Matthias. God chose us. We're chosen.
When I go through the things that I go through at times, I think to myself, I can't wait to tell this story in 40 years when I get to sit down and like, you know, and I always tell people, I wasn't very public with this small little story, but I was actually teaching in Texas. And, you know, hopefully the guy who said this to me can reach out to me because I'd like to know who it was. I believe it was at my Austin class. First time I went to Texas teaching Austin. And, you know, everybody wants to talk in the break. So 5 or 6, especially now. Now it's, you know, 4 years later from that moment. Now it's everybody wants to talk, which is great. I love it. I do pictures, the whole nine. So this guy said, hey, you got a minute to talk? Do you have something? Can I just ask you a question? I went, sure. And it was very quiet. It was just him and I. And he said, and there were people in the room, but they weren't near us. And he said, what does it feel like to know that you're changing the world? Mm-hmm. And I went, you know what? I think about this all the time. I've never shared it with one person in my life. And I'll tell you why I don't, because when you say things like that, people think you're fucking crazy. But I think about it every single day.
Yeah.
He's like, and he told me, he goes, well, I see it, bro. I know you're going to do it. And I said, I appreciate you that you acknowledge what the kind of work that I'm doing here. He said, what does it feel like? I said, I'll let you know when the job's done. I'm not sure yet, but I know what my job, and it's a wild thing to think.
Yeah.
That you're going to try to change the world. And you know, change the world doesn't mean every single thing in the world, but to have an impact enough where people regard you when you're no longer here. So when I go through these trials and tribulations of what it means to do something as big as we're doing, I see myself at 85 years old sitting there saying, well, giving advice to those who are on a new journey themselves, right? Hey, you know, listen, then this happened, then that happened. Then right after that, this happened. Then I was doing this, things looked great. I couldn't believe it. I had all these things. And all of a sudden I had to sell some of those things to do some of these things and da da da. And like, so, and I try to take a lot of advice from people who have walked down a similar path. So I know when it arrives, I expect it almost. And you get a little more prepared.
My advice to you, because my unsolicited advice, my advice to you, because, you know, I'm hearing you say this. And I remember when that had started happening to me, you know, years back, I was like, whoa, it, you know, this guy's asking you how you feel and you're telling me the story. And I, all of these things are just coming up because, you know, it feels scary. It feels unworthy. It feels great. It feels inspiring. It feels all of these things. And it feels surreal. It feels, sometimes it feels to me like I'm in a dream. But what I've had people say that, you know, you're saving lives, you're changing the world, you're doing. And I think it's because people, they don't really think we can. Like, you ever talk to somebody, you know, what do you want to do? And then with your business, or what do you want to, what's your end goal here? And what's your ultimate goal in life? And people say, I want to change the world. And people will laugh and giggle. Oh, that's cute. Because I think people really don't believe you can, but we can. Mm-hmm. We really can. Little things like what you're doing, what I'm doing, what so many other, you know, men and women in this profession are trying to do out there, that all chips away at it. You know, we're changing the world in our own little way, a little bit at a time. And how does that feel? That feels, you know, like all those things I just said, scary. It feels great. It feels surreal. It feels unreal. It feels like a dream. It feels motivating. It feels depressing. It feels heavy. It feels light. So my advice to you, Dennis, as you're navigating through this stuff, because I guarantee you more people feel that way about you than have even articulated to you.
Let me ask you a question, though.
I would say really quick, let yourself feel all those things, Dennis.
I do. What's interesting, in order for you to, let me know if this resonates with you, because this triggered in my brain as you were speaking. This may sound kind of strange, but do you ever feel like with all these things around you and all the admiration, or whatever it may be, although you're not lonely physically, you understand that in your soul, as you are following your destination, you are a lone soldier going. I mean, you got your people, but I'm saying you are lonely at times because that's kind of who you have to be in touch with is yourself. You have to make sure you know who you are. So often I feel, listen, I have children. I don't feel lonely in that sense, but I feel lonely in the sense of, like, I don't know how to actually put it into words, but there is, I don't mean lonely where I'm sad. I'm lonely like it's me, right?
Yes.
And I don't mean that like I don't have great instructors and da da da. I mean, it's a real deep place. Like, because I love everybody here. They're all doing a great job. And everybody, you know, I'm saying, but like when I get into my head, I just feel like if I can give you a visual, like almost like a desperado, like walking, just keep knowing that there's something there. Just like not on a horse, just walking with like the shotgun in the hand, the bandolier around the.
No, I absolutely can completely connect with what you're saying. And it's funny because I can see you saying it, but also you don't want to offend the people who are around, right? Your instructors, your family, your kids. Cause you always go, I know I have my kids and I know I have it. Like I have a great support system. I have my family who loves me that are there. I have, you know, lots of people who support me that are not personal friends and support me from afar, but I even have this tiny little, my circle is small. I have a tiny little group of a core tribe that I know that love me and are right there to support me. But you're lonely. You feel lonely because you are right. It is you.
You know what? I'm actually going to change it a little bit. I think I'm going to say, because now I've gotten to it, because it takes a while, right? You go to therapy. You know, it takes a while to get to some of this shit.
Yeah.
I think I'm more of a loner in some sense. Instead of lonely.
When you're chosen, remember you said this now. We were chosen. I love my aunt. She's sitting right here next to me. She's always by my side. She supports me when she's not next to me. I love my daughter, my son, my parents, my family. Look, I have a great support system and I love them, but they're not on this journey with me the way that I am.
Right.
And for fear of sounding unappreciative of the support or because you know that people will hear it and go, well, you're not alone. You have me. No, I know this, but you and I understand completely. You are alone essentially on your journey because you were selected for it. It's a road that you will travel. I've learned this over the years. It is a road that I travel, that I have to travel alone.
Right.
My belief system is very spiritual. So my belief system tells me that no one else is allowed on this road because God chose me to be on it and he walks with me on it. And it has to be intimate and only he and I. And they say, what do they say? Our God is a jealous God, right? It has to be he and I, because if there's anybody else on that path, I could be distracted away from the things that he's working on me with. So yeah, I feel alone. What do you think, you know, some of these spiritual leaders and gurus, they're alone much of the time because they are in tune with the higher spirituality, whatever that is for them. And I believe that a lot of people like you, like me, that are on specific journeys, we're on those journeys alone. And so for that reason, of course, it feels lonely. Of course, chiefs of police who command entire agencies probably feel alone. And they're surrounded by people who are there to support them in the profession, a support team, but they still feel alone. Everybody who's on a specific journey with a specific task will be on it alone in some way, shape, or form. And I feel like it would be impossible for you not to feel that way. And again, allow yourself to feel that, man, allow it. I used to feel guilty for feeling it. And I would guilt myself and I'd be, oh, you're being selfish. You're not alone. You've got all these people who love you. And I think that is one of the things, you know, that I still struggle with is guilt, you know, minutes ago when I said I felt guilty, that's probably one of the very few times I got like teary-eyed, because guilt for me is a thing. It's my opponent, the opponent that is in front of me that I'm constantly boom, boom, trading blows with is one of guilt, is one of post-traumatic stress issues. And I constantly fight those battles. But just know, you're not the only one fighting it. And you are not the only one, Dennis, who feels alone on it. And you know, I get it.
Listen, I accept the challenge. And I think some of that loneliness comes from the amount of responsibility I now have, because I have a lot of responsibility. And as things occur to me, for me, whatever it may be, that responsibility doesn't vanish. And I still have to continue to show up. And I'm thankful that I'm able to do that. That's why I think I was, because I think that if people went through the things that I had gone through over the past 12 to 20 months in my life, 24, something like that, 22 months, I've had people say to me like, dude, I would be in the fucking loony bin. And that's why I'm like, all right, I'm the guy. Like, I'm the guy. If this didn't break me, I don't know if anything ever can. You know what I mean? And that's why even there are times where I'm like, this is why I'm reminded that as much as I don't want to be doing this by myself, in my mind, I am doing this by myself.
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to. It's.
And again, that's not a narcissistic statement. That's meant from a very spiritual place of like being here and having and that means me being a great human being to other people, to see things differently than other people see things, to make things better, to be a great leader, a great coworker, a great boss, a great husband, a great father, all those things, and a great friend, and all those important relationships. That's what I'm really getting to here. It's not, and that's where it gets confused. You know, I'll tell you some of this guilt that comes along with some of this stuff, right? So there is success guilt as well. Especially I came from nothing, and it's not hard to figure out that I've had some success. Now, it's been a tough year this year, but in the previous years, I've had some success and financial success at that. So I was having a conversation with my therapist last week. And again, it's interesting why I go to therapy. I'm not like a guy who's like really dealing with a lot of things. I went for one reason and ended up sticking around. And then I kind of like forfeited. I was like, you know what? I'm good. And then like a month later, I'm like, I'm going to come back. Something came up. I just want to get your thoughts on it. And like I'm trying to be the best human being for other people. Teach me how. Right, because my therapist is so much more compassionate, and I'm learning a lot about her. She's like, don't look at it that way. Look at it this way. And I'm like, that's a great way to look at it. So now I can be a better person for other people. I'm not like at night losing sleep. I'm a very calm person. I just sometimes need a second perspective from one that I can trust.
And that's how it's designed to be used, actually. Right.
So I said something about money, and then I said, but then I'll just spend that kind of money. Da, da, da. And she said, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like I was bragging. And she goes, I didn't think you were bragging. Why do you think that? And I said, because I have been criticized and ridiculed for being excited about having success in the past by my family, by my friends. I've lost family and friends over my success, my financial success. I'm not kidding you. I'm not making that up. It's not bullshit.
Yeah.
And I've had some straight. So I have a complex around it a little bit where, and not only me, by the way, I have two very, very, very wealthy, successful friends that I'm very close with. And I actually said to one of my friends, how come you never told me how much you make? Like, you didn't give me even an insight as to how much you made. I had to like dig it out of you. He goes, because you got to know your audience. You can't say it to everybody.
Right.
I go, but if you would have said it to me, it would have changed my life. He goes, I don't know. You know, I didn't know that. But he's like, it's a very uncomfortable thing to have when other people don't.
Right.
And it's true. There's a lot of guilt behind that.
I will tell you that two things. If you've never read the book, Can't Hurt Me, I suggest.
David Goggins. I haven't read it yet, but I'm.
If you haven't read it, I highly suggest you wait to read it if you want to read it over later. But I highly suggest the audio book, because it was one of the first, if not the first of its kind to do
it right now.
This way, the Audible Can't Hurt Me is a book, a podcast within the book. So while you're reading the book, then you'll come back and you'll hear David Goggins and the guy reading the book, and they'll be like, damn, David, damn, Goggins. Okay, tell me this chapter was, and they discuss the chapter that he just read, that you just heard. So you get even more insight. It's incredible. I think it was very well done. One day I would like to draw inspiration for how they did their Audible book for when my book is out, to do my book the same way for the Audible, because I think it's great and it provides the reader with more insight, more connection. And then the second thing that I want to give you is if you get on your Netflix account, watch the Netflix documentary by Jonah Hill called Stutz. Sam, Tom, Union, Tom Zebra, Stutz. What that is Jonah Hill making a documentary film about his therapist and the philosophies of his therapist and the techniques of his therapist. And it's incredible.
It's awesome.
I give those two little nuggets to you because I think you, of all people that, you know, talking to you, are going to really appreciate that. But the viewers as well, just really good little pieces of stuff. You know, I'm always looking for, you know, ways to try to understand, you know, what we're talking about here, this fight after the fight that we you know, we're picking up on here, second half of the podcast. And so
there might be a third half of this, just so we're clear. This might be two or three.
I'm down. We could
I think it's going to be a two of three because we're still on this and I haven't even gotten to where I wanted to go with other shit.
I know.
It's going to be two of three. No question about it. Don't be fucking brushing me off till right before the conference.
I will not. You know, we would have met last time had I not got the laryngitis, right?
Okay. I'm joking. I'm kidding.
I tell you what, but yeah, I'm always looking for ways to try to kind of understand and try to learn more about the journey, if you will, and improve myself. And it sounds like you're that type of person too. So for you and for the people who are listening that are all about that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just really good stuff. The audiobook for David Goggins, Can't Hurt Me, and the documentary film by Jonah Hill on Netflix called Stutz. Wow. Pretty cool stuff, man. Really insightful stuff. I think you're going to get a lot out of it. And I expect a text from you telling me what you think.
I'm going to give you two things that spoke to me recently that are anybody has access to as well. One of the best film documentaries I've ever seen in my life. And it may be very likely that because it's very near and dear to my heart as a New Jersey boy with New York roots, is the Frank Sinatra documentary on Netflix. Is unbelievable.
I haven't seen it. I've seen it there, but I haven't watched it.
So to me, that was a remarkable thing to watch because you didn't realize that Frank Sinatra, one of the biggest icons in American history, experienced some very, very tremendous difficulty. And
I'm looking for it right now. It's on Netflix.
Yo, it's phenomenal. I mean, there's two part episode. It is unbelievable. And I got to tell you, everybody I've recommended to, especially here in Jersey, because like we all grew up with Frank Sinatra on in the background at every family party. You go to weddings here in Jersey and New York, while the cocktail hour is going on and you're eating, all they're playing is Frank Sinatra. So it's very, very much in our culture here.
Right.
So that one really, really, because he had gone through heartache and down times, and he was actually at one point in his career, he was at the lowest, and he wrote a song, and I think it's a wonderful song. I think people, I've heard it 1,000 times, I know every single word to it. But after that documentary, I never heard it the same again. And I was singing it the other day, and I said, this is literally my song, and that's life.
That's life. You know, that's like everybody's song that knows, right? When you know, that's
listen to the words. I've been a pauper, a pirate. Pauper's a poor person, a pirate, a pawn, and a king. I've been up and down and over and out. And I know one thing, each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the race.
Yep.
And
that's a great song. That always gives me the goosies. Like even just you doing the lyrics, right? I got the goosies. I actually turned my daughter onto that song when she was about 15 or 16. Cause we're music lovers. And if you're that person that music resonates and you don't know that song, you got to check that song out for sure.
And the second one that I'm going to give you is I was flabbergasted and profoundly found myself with so much more of a different perspective with compassion. When I watched the Elvis movie, the new one, have you seen that?
Yep.
I watched that, and my heart bled for that guy.
Yeah.
You know, I really did. Like there's a lot, they did a nice job because I think anybody had any kind of perceptions about who that man was, whether that movie was indicative of the truth, it certainly gave me a lot of compassion because I can understand some of it. You know what I mean? I'm having success. I have attention. I enjoy it tremendously, but with it comes a lot of And again, I'm not somebody who's going to start doing drugs. And he was a very, very young guy, misguided. I'm, you know, starting to enjoy this success in my late 30s into early 40s. I have a lot more wisdom at this point in my life. I don't think I would have seen it the same 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I understand it.
Yeah. And that goes back to what I was just saying. It wasn't applicable to you 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's applicable now and it resonates now. And eventually somebody somewhere will have some success and, you know, be in a, have a come up financially. And then they may be the person that says something, you know, really crappy about you and, but they'll get it. Then they'll get it. Maybe one day somebody who's talking about me behind my back, you know, say, oh, she's really milking this for her 5 minutes of fame. You know, okay. Whenever that person's been through something that's taken them on a journey to span a decade, they'll understand and it'll resonate. So that's why I really just try to look at it from that perspective, because it saves me a lot of one, unnecessarily being stressed out and angry and bitter. I can't hold on to that. I was in a very dark place for a lot of years, and working my way out of that, I don't want to go back there. So I always look for ways to try to just, hey, you know what? This is how I look at it. My perspective is different. I am different. And, you know, regardless of what people saw on my dash cam, I survived the shooting. That and Carrizales died that night. And I mourned her for a lot of years, and I didn't realize that's what was happening to me. I mourned her until I realized the beautiful opportunity for me to recreate myself as a human being, as a woman, into something far more strong, far more in touch with my emotions, far more self-aware, far more, you know, emotionally intelligent, if you will, than I ever was. I'm a better mother because of it. I'm a better friend because of it. I'm just a better overall woman because of all that. But at the time, I didn't know it. It didn't apply to me then. So now I know.
You get to hand that off to other people. You get to train people on what that feels like. And the last thing I want to do today, because this is definitely two of three, maybe two of four. Yeah.
Hey, I told you we could do a whole series on this, man.
Seriously. But I'm going to say a word.
Okay.
And I believe this word, if people can really start to internalize this, could not only change the profession of law enforcement, but might change the world. And it's a real hard thing to have in practice. But if you get good at it, your life will be so much more fulfilled. And it's compassion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's hard to have compassion.
Well, I think it's hard for some people to have compassion.
I think we even maybe, and I'll couple compassion with empathy, because the question I ask people is, are you putting yourself in the shoes of the person who you consider to be your adversary, that you are casting judgment towards? Do you know who they are? Or, and again, I'm not going to make this a, I'm going to try to really skirt around this, but a lot of our sometimes political figures, you know, I look at some of the behaviors and I say, why are they acting that way? Why are they doing that? Why, what is the behavior there? What is the detriment? If you would know the backstory behind some of this stuff, you'd probably have a lot more compassion. One story that kind of prompted this was, there was a police supervisor who gave their guys a hard time. It's a real story. Mm-hmm. And so I had to hear about this guy for a while. So they finally convinced him to go to my training course. So I never forget being at the training course. I don't want to say where. And, you know, typically in the past, I would be somebody, if I knew somebody was coming who was a naysayer to the what things that I was doing was, it's pretty hard to try to diminish our efforts. You'd have to, it's a real tough thing to try to, like, our stuff's so noble that you've got to be really in a bad place to not appreciate it. And what it really comes down to a lot of times is people are held accountable, and accountability of knowledge and their behavior and what we think of leadership. And so they get challenged. They live in their own little paradise, their own little ecosystem of the 19 people that work at their police department. There's somebody, they're number 17 in the 19, right? Some shit like that.
Yeah.
Or number three, I would say, obviously, in the 19. And I remember these guys saying, like, this guy did it, da da da. And it was a big class. There was probably 150 people in this class, and I could already tell who it was. Just on his disposition,
isn't
right?
That funny? Yeah. Isn't that funny?
But I decided to go a different route because I've been learning a lot about compassion. And I really, really gave a heartfelt explanation of whatever I said, but I meant it for one person in that room. But that one person, it meant I knew if I could make it for him, it would be good for everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it was after class in the lunch break, he came up and this is literally what he said. He goes, you know, I'm not an asshole. This is what he said to me. He goes, you know, I read case law, but I don't understand it. He's like, and I get nervous when these guys go out and do things and I'm scared. And like, I want to be a lieutenant. And he's like, I'm not a fucking bad person. He's like, I just can't, I'm dyslexic and I can't comprehend things like you guys comprehend things.
Wow.
And I said, and dude, he like literally like threw a hug at me. So I had options that morning to go in and make it more miserable where I could express compassion. And you know what? They wrote to me the following week. They go, we don't know what you did, but he is different. And there was an issue that had to be resolved. I could have went at him with horns like a maniac, but I decided not to. And it's so interesting how fast that got resolved and how much happier everybody was. And then I said to him, I gave him advice. I'm like, you don't have to know everything. As a good leader, you could even be honest and vulnerable with your people and say, I don't understand this. But I gave him advice on you can serve well, they will like you. And dude, it was such an interesting moment. And I share that with people not to brag, but to understand that, try to understand what that person's going through. Mm-hmm. People appreciate compassion so much. A guy called me last night. I made time for him. He had been fired. I'm not going to go too much details in case he's listening. And he asked me about Fourth Amendment issues with the actions that he took. And I said, I can already feel and explain to you the 4 or 5 Fourth Amendment violations that you committed. And I said, you know, there's a reason why we are such an advocation from us on learning constitutional case law, because here you are, they wanted it, you gave it to them, you thought you were doing the right thing, there was no malice behind it, and they did you for it. Right. I said, I can't sit here and tell you the things that you want to hear, but what I can say to you is, I feel very badly for you. I think what they did to you is terrible. I can't imagine what it's like to be in your shoes right now and the panic that you're in, the embarrassment you must feel. I know you didn't mean it. And if anybody ever thinks that you meant it, they'd be, I don't even know who you are. I can just hear it in your voice that you thought you were doing the right thing.
Right.
I said, so just understand that I feel very, very sorry. I feel very badly for you. I really do. You have a lot of compassion for me. I've been you before. I've been the subject of the trumped up disciplinary charges. I have been that. I know what it feels like. And I didn't lose my job, but you did. I can't imagine what you're going through.
Yeah.
And you know, at first, when I would say these things, he's like, yeah, but I'm like, I understand it's not what you want to hear. But on the other side of it, like, I don't think you're a bad person. Yeah. You know, I don't even think you made a mistake. I think that you were in just a bad set of circumstances that got you, you know, and this is why we're trying to do the best we can to ensure that that doesn't happen again in the future, other people.
Right.
I'm going to use this story to tell people why the importance of knowing constitutional law, what you have to know about these things.
And you should use the story. You should use all of these experiences that you're accumulating on this journey of yours. You said it earlier, you said, we should take these things and we should give it to somebody else, right? That's exactly right. That's exactly why I do what I do. And I've said it before. I read this somewhere. I think they said it was Muhammad Ali said it. I'm not sure. I don't know it to be a fact that this is his quote, but I read it somewhere. And so the quote, I'm not going to try to quote it because I don't remember what it is, but the paraphrase thing is like, that's pretty much the rent that we pay on earth, right? We go through things, we learn these things, the things that I've gone through, that I've overcome, I give to other people because I feel like it's my responsibility. I have a duty to do it. It's the rent that I pay here on earth for this, you know, second, third chance on life that I have here to be alive. And long after I'm gone, like you said, long after I'm gone, there will probably still be people out there that have something negative to say about what I've done here. But there will be so many more people who I will have left a fingerprint on in some way, shape, or form. They didn't quit because of what they heard, or they didn't quit because of inspiration they drew from my story, or they didn't, you know, quit because they thought they were alone and now realize how much not alone they are. And that is the legacy that I'll leave for my children to remember. And for me, that's it. That's what it's about. giving it back to our brothers and sisters in law enforcement, giving them the information that nobody's really giving us enough of, if at all, and giving them the opportunity to avoid taking the KO, the knockout from an opponent in a fight that I call the fight after the fight. Avoid that. If they can avoid that, it's like I'm a sparring partner. I'm going to spar with you and I'm going to help you prepare for this fight with these opponents in the aftermath of whatever that is for you. Why? Because I've been there. I fought this opponent before, many times before. Sometimes I've lost, sometimes I've won. But the point is I have that experience. I mean, and think about it. You don't have to be a champion fighter to know that that's probably the guy or girl you want to spar with, the one who's been there. And that's why I give it back. You know, your reasons for giving it back are your reasons. And it's so cool to hear you kind of going in down that rabbit hole of trying to get to the bottom of, you know, who you were 7 years ago. It's going to have all kinds of positive. You doing it right. If you do it right, it's going to have all kinds of positive impacts on not only your business, but everybody who comes to learn from you. And that's all I want to do.
This is the time where I think if we went any further, we couldn't find a better ending. So I'm going to end it here.
All right.
This will be just part two. How many parts? We don't know.
We don't know.
And Kara Zales is going to be at the Street Cop Conference.
I am. I will be there.
We'll do something nice for you.
I was finally invited.
You were going to get invited anyway, ladies. But you will be there.
I will be there.
I promise you, no bullshit. By the time you get ready to go, because you have an engagement on the end of the week, you're going to say this was fucking amazing. I am actually so impatient for it to occur, even though I have a lot of work to do still. I am so impatient and so excited for this event. And I'll tell you why, because this is not a cheap sell.
Okay.
The last event we did, October of 2021, was the best professional week of my life. I've never experienced anything like it. It was amazing. And the feedback was outrageous. And we're doing it better than last time. We'll do it better than last time every single time, because I'm learning as I go. And it's going to be fucking nuts.
You do cool shit. Send me a ticket. I'm there.
Yeah, you know, you got a ticket. We got you. We'll figure it out. Be in touch. And listen, happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you too. And to everybody that's out there. Well, they probably will hear this after Thanksgiving. So I don't know.
You want to plug something for yourself? Where can they find you? Can they follow you on Instagram?
They can find me on Instagram. They can find me on, so if you're on Facebook, I'm under Officer Ann Carrizales on Facebook. If you want to look for me on Instagram, I'm under Officer Ann Carrizales on Instagram.
Well, Carrizales.
It's C-A-R-R-I. So think of Carrie without the E, Carrie without the E, and then Zales Diamond Store, Z-A-L-E-S, Carrizales.
This is great.
But I will at some point, because I'm having a website built and my goal is to do and run virtuals from that website and things of that nature. And you know, I'm looking to do new things because I'm starting to see what the need is and what people are wanting from me. So I'm pulling the trigger on a lot of these things. And so that's what we're looking for. In fact, actually, I'm looking to do a virtual fight after the fight, right before the holiday, right before the Christmas holiday, because I know that's when people struggle. People really start to struggle before the holidays. And so I'm going to put two virtuals out. You can help me put those out later in your social media platforms, Dennis.
I'm a well-known man on social media.
Well, says you.
Oh, no, I've got the proof and the analytics.
All right. Hey, happy Thanksgiving. I'll see you again on the next one.
Yeah,
and
Frank, you'll set it up.
To it.
Okay, this is great. I had a great time today.
All right, you guys take care, y'all.
Bye.
Have fun.
I'll see you.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at streetcop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher. So you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out streetcop.com for that offer.